Hey guys, this is Joe748, and this is the bonus podcast with Burning Down the House, officially Million Dollar Card Counter. And we asked people on the forum to post any questions that you had for Burning, and you guys gave some incredible questions. And the goal is to do a rapid fire question and answer to try to answer as many as we possibly can. Now, we can't get to them all because, I mean, realistically, it would take hours, and he's got to get back to the tables at some point. So we're going to do our best to try to consolidate these questions and answer as many as we can. What are the measures you take to avoid giving out ID?
Well, sometimes I'll just straight up not go into a place, especially if I'm new to the market, or it's my first stop on a market and I see that they're scanning IDs immediately, I won't give them my ID at all. And if I see that they don't have a passport scanner, I'll try to give them a passport. But, you know, when I'm asked for ID at the cage, a lot of the times I would recommend just saying that you don't want to show it, you know, because immediately when you say you don't have it, they'll just kick you out. They won't even cash you out because they'll say that you need your ID on the floor. But yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Yeah. How do you grapple with trips where the hours are just slim?
Well, that depends. If I'm done and I realize I'm not going to get any more hours on that trip, sometimes I'll just hop on a plane, or if I'm in a rental car, I'll drive 10 hours away if I have to. If I know I have like 3 or 4 more days to be out, or I'll jump on a plane and just leave and go to another market.
How do you decide when to cross that CTR threshold? Let's say like you're playing at a place, you're in 9,000 and you're in the middle of a shoe. How do you make that call?
It's hard to say. If it's a place that I've been backed off from a ton of times and I know that they'll know exactly who I am, I probably won't give it. But if it's like a really massive count and it looks like they're just going to let me keep playing once I give them the ID and I might be able to finish like 1 or 2 more decks at max bets, I'll give it to them. But sometimes they won't do that. Sometimes they'll be like, you got to wait. And then they take your ID. And then I'm like, oh, that's when you're screwed. Because then you're not able to play anymore. And you're gonna get booted. It's somewhere along those lines.
At this stage of your career, like if you had to give a percentage of the times where you're forced to CTR, an instant back off, how often does that happen where it's just an instant back off right after the CTR?
I mean, more times than not. I don't know a percentage, but when I give my ID in that situation, I'm like, shit, I'm done after this shoe. That's my understanding of it, but sometimes I'll still do it. Like maybe if it's the last day of the trip and I'm going to be fired, they're going to tag a name with me and all that stuff. But if it's at the beginning of a trip, I would not recommend doing it because then you're just going to be blasted. Your name and all your information is going to be at the top of the list. You might have a hard time getting in time anywhere else.
What have been the biggest mental health pitfalls you've encountered on your way to 1 million? And what things have you done to protect yourself and your game from those pitfalls?
We just talked about that in the podcast previously, but definitely alcoholism has been a pitfall, and other mental pitfalls, just, you know, thinking that there won't be an end to the negative variance, which is something that I've gotten better at ignoring. And, you know, just protecting myself by constantly being aware of these thoughts and not letting them take over and recognizing them and stopping them in their tracks when they happen. And also, I'm quitting drinking. So
any particular casino you enjoyed sticking it to and why?
Yeah, the very first casino that I ever played that I had lost at as a gambler for a year, and my father lost a lot of money there as well. He was just a degen, so to say. And in the first 2 weeks of card counting, I took $21,000 from them. And then they came up to me and they're like, hey, you can't play anymore. I was like, I've lost so much money here. And he said, yeah, not recently. And like an asshole too, he said it. So it was really nice to stick it to them, get my money back plus some, get backed off.
Longest winning session a casino was letting you play. I guess that means like kind of while you're up still, like did they just let you keep grinding?
I still have casinos where it's a massive win and I'm still playing. I'll just say that.
We kind of talked about this in the last podcast, but any plans for retirement? Like what is your ideal future retirement?
So retirement from blackjack, not sure when that is. I keep saying 1 to 2 years and I've been saying that for 4 years. So we'll see. I'm not exactly sure what retirement would be from blackjack or when it would be, but it would definitely involve taking my mentality of having a bankroll to other investment and business opportunities. But retirement in totality, like in my life, will never happen.
Is there any way that you reset yourself to become a fresh player in a region, I guess, after you kind of gone through all the backups? Let's say you go to a town and there's like 10 casinos or something and you got burned out everywhere. What's your approach the next time you go to that town?
Maybe try a different order of casinos that you hit. Try a different order. Of course, a completely different look. Maybe if you got popped in the high limit, go to the main floor. If you got popped on the main floor, go to the high limit. You know, switch up different things like that. You know, did you drive on property? Like, don't do that. Take an Uber. Just take note of all those things. Just change everything and see if you get a different outcome. And if you don't, then just give it a lot more time and then try a different casino first. This is, you know, and then, you know, and along the trial and error process, you'll probably be getting in some hours. You know, that's kind of how the like amalgamation of my career has been.
Yeah. I mean, I tell a story at boot camp a lot where I went to a place, got backed off in 30 minutes with no ID, unrated. I go back a year later, I was playing rated and I lasted 2 days and won 40 grand. So I kind of reversed it. That was like the third place I went to. So of course I got fired. So the second trip, the next year, that was the first place I went to. And it was no problem, even though I was rated. So what's your most memorable card counting like moment, session, or?
It just recently happened. The shoe that I hit officially, 1 million. It was very emotional, you know, because it was like kind of like getting my father's money back too, you know, because he was said to have gambled $1 million over his lifetime. So that's been like a huge, like kind of emotional goal. And, you know, he passed away 10 years ago. And, you know, the whole time I'm just like, can he see this? Is he seeing this? Like, I got it. I looked up and I said, I got it back, Dad. And I literally just grabbed the chips in the middle of the shoe. And I said, I got to go. And like, I just called my wife and I was like, we fucking made $1 million from blackjack. And then she went, I went to the little gift shop, got a bottle of champagne, went up to the room and she was blasting O'Millie by Lil Wayne. That definitely is the newest and most memorable. That was probably the biggest high yet from card counting.
Where has been your favorite place to play without giving away, you know, any kind of secret game or anything like that? Is there any particular place where you just liked the atmosphere, or the people, or it's just a weird, quirky place?
Several places outside of the U.S., to be honest, you know, where it seemed like they knew what I was doing, but they were, you know, they like let me play. I was tipping very well. I was like a mutual respect sort of thing. It's happened all over the world, you know, but when there's a mutual respectful feeling going on and you're taking care of them and they're taking care of you, that's just always the best feeling.
Yeah, it's such a refreshing change compared to like when you're just getting backed off and mean mugged like along the way, like every 30 minutes. It's just like, what's been the best comp that you've received?
My favorite comp was another friend's comp. We had like $800 Polo, Marco Polo. Him and I had like $800. He had a comp to like an MGM steakhouse here. And we ate like steaks, just the two of us. We spent it all. We got drinks. We got like so much fun because we got the oysters. We got the Alaskan king crab. We just gorged ourselves. That's pretty memorable, but nothing too crazy.
Have there ever been any situations where you change your style of play? You know, you're known to be a quote unquote maximizer. Have you ever like been in a situation where, oh, I'm going to do a little tighter spread or, you know?
I have, not often. I can probably count them on one hand. I have done that. Maybe bet a little bit under the table max or, you know, have like a jump spread where, you know, it's like 2x100 and then just max bet at like 2x400, but there's no like progressive, like step up type spread. And, you know, different things like that where I'm not completely maximizing EV, but, you know, at the effort of trying to last a little longer or fold the casino. But I stopped that like completely over a year ago.
How do you determine what percent of your bankroll is like use liquid for bankroll versus any kind of investments or real estate or anything like that?
I like to keep my risk at 0.1%. You know, whatever I decide my spread to be for that moment is how much cash I keep on. But I've recently just decided, especially for this year, no more stocks. I've got money that I can't touch because it's in freaking options right now that are just beat to shit. But they're leaps, so their expiration dates are way out. I'm sure they'll be fine. But I'm not doing that shit anymore. I'm like, this has been the thing that I've had the most success at. I should put all my eggs in this basket.
How do you keep your motivation alive after all these hours of playing? Like, how do you keep going?
By the next upswing. To be perfectly honest, it's, you know, the drain and the suck comes when you're just getting your ass kicked and not getting in time and you're just beat up. You know, those are the times where it's easy to just be like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, this isn't working. And then it's like, boom, and you're like, holy shit. You know, it just kind of, they kind of go hand in hand, but it's not about keeping inspiration. It's more about keeping a level head through the ups and downs, I think, is what helps with the longevity. And if you like, when I look at it more and more as an inner struggle that can influence my everyday life, that's when it becomes something other than even blackjack and helps the longevity as well.
Were there any mistakes you made early on that allowed you to get more hours at the casino, you know, learning from those mistakes? Like, did you ever make any kind of like wrong moves that you wish you didn't, that you would have lasted longer? Or?
Giving ID, that's the number one. I think the first place that ever got me was like, what was it? I forget. A big property in the South. And you know, I gave them my ID and that was the first database I was ever entered in and just flyered. And like, I would never, ever give my ID, ever. Unless you know for sure you can play at a place and play rated and like it'll be good and like you could get the boot or trespass, but they don't share information, like don't give your ID. Don't do it. But I know that's unfair and hard to players that kind of rely on the, you know, getting like subsidized by the comps and things like that. So, you know, but I still don't think it's worth it. If you're going to take this grind seriously, you're going to level up, you're going to do things. Eventually, those comps that you get are going to be like not worth it, I think. But there's other people that say opposite.
It's a super tough call. And this is like one of the most, I feel like this is the most common question we get at the boot camps. It's like, do I play rated? Do I not play rated? Is it worth it? Is it not worth it? It's just, it's so hard to determine and we can't tell the future and everyone's bankroll is different. But I will say, like, there is a certain bankroll that is small enough to the point where you almost don't have an option. Like, you have to get comped rooms if you're playing not locally. Like, you can't afford to be spending money on hotel rooms like every single night. So in that case, but if, yeah, if you're in that mid-tier like bankroll, it's a hard thing to choose.
Yeah, I know. I still am like, you find a way to do it without getting a card. That's what I would say. Could sleep in your rental car. I don't know. If you plan to grow with this, my recommendation would be don't have any place have your ID. It's just hard. It's a hard thing to do.
And then it's tricky because there are some casinos, I swear, where it's like once I give them my ID, then they like relax and they stop sweating me. That doesn't happen often. I mean, more often than not, if I give my ID, it doesn't turn out well. But every once in a while, like, yeah, I'll give my ID, and then they are cool about it. Like, but I think those are the places that probably aren't relying on the database.
Always cool.
Yeah.
Or they're probably just like cool. Like, all right, everyone calms down, and then surveillance is like, this fucking guy counts cards, and they're like, hey, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
But, like, they're cool till that happens.
Yeah, but you do have that nice relief. I'm sure you felt this where it's like you're playing. And once you get past that like couple hour mark or 4 hour mark, you could just like relax. You're like, oh, wow, I'm like going to be okay here for at least a little bit. Oh, it's
right.
Just like,
I know.
It takes the tension off. You're just like, I'm good.
Yeah. And along the terms of that, I start going into places and I'm like, you're going to get 5 minutes. You know, so that it kind of takes that stress or that anxiety away from like, oh, am I okay? I'm just like, you're not okay. You're not going to last here. You're screwed. Just sit down and play. Don't think about anything else, you know, and then I'll deal with whatever happens, whether it's a back off or like an aggressive ID or a CTR. Just sit down, play.
Let's talk music. What kind of instruments did you play, or like what kind of band were you in? And do you have plans to do any more music in the future?
I played pretty much all instruments, singer songwriter, and you know, kind of eclectic styles. I've done many different genres of music. My bread and butter was always playing live, but I kind of lost the passion for that because, you know, the really good paying gigs ended up being gigs where people like don't really pay attention. It's like a vacation cheesy gig, but it pays really well. So I got burnt out on that because my passion was always writing, like expressing myself through like song and like I loved production. I loved recording. So I haven't done that in a while because we're moving along, but I have a really nice setup for like a home studio and recording setup and everything. And when we actually get settled in one space again, I look forward to cracking that all open, put it together. And then whenever I feel inspired, jump in there and write some music and record it again. But I don't miss playing live too much.
Nice. Yeah, there's another BGA pro. I don't know if he wants me to say his name, so I'll just not. But he showed me his studio setup that was 100% funded by like money that he got from casinos playing blackjack. And it was so awesome to see. What's your favorite destination that you've traveled to for like an AP trip?
I guess in terms of it just being awesome, Aruba. You know, the conditions are playable, I think. There's a lot of low limits, but it's just such a unique, very nicely temperate like climate, beautiful blue waters. It's a unique little island, and my family and I really, really enjoyed the perks of the island, as well as getting in some time, but they got me there too. But it was one of those places where like when I didn't have any place to play, I was like, this isn't so bad. Now I can't work, so I'm not going to. Time to enjoy this beautiful island.
What do you do to stay physically and mentally healthy on the road?
Physically and mentally healthy. A lot of the times we have a gym, like in the hotels we stay at. But I usually just walk right past those and go to the bar and curl a beer. No, just kidding. Half joking. No, a lot of the times I'll do like, I've got this thing called super legs where it's like just using your body weight, a bunch of squats and lunges and stuff, and do three sets of those. I do push-ups and pull-ups to keep myself, the muscle physically growing. And, mentally, just kind of keeping in touch with all those thoughts going through your head. It's another dynamic too, being with the family too, because, you know, if I get too lost in the swings and chasing the hours with blackjack, I start to feel like a piece of shit neglecting my family. So that's like a whole part of it too. But just constantly trying to manage all those things and be somewhat conscious of those. We eat a lot of groceries. It's so hard, especially in the States, to eat healthy. In Europe, it's easier. Like what's considered gourmet over here is food over there. Like it's crazy. It's the food's so much better there. But we grocery shop a ton, you know, to save expenses, and we shop 90% in the produce section.
Is that just because you have Airbnb setups with kitchens, or are you able to do that?
Well, we also look, there's a lot of options too these days where there's like, you know, the hotels that have the little kitchenette in them, like a little stovetop and like, you know, a microwave and different things. And we travel when we're in the States, we have a pressure cooker too, an electric pressure cooker. So we can do everything from soups to boil eggs.
That's the key.
Yeah. The electric, or what do they call them? Instapots, but that's just a brand type. But that thing, that device is super diverse, what you can make in that thing, meals.
I never even thought about it. I don't know why. It just never occurred to me, but yeah, it is so versatile.
Yeah, those are great. Yeah.
Favorite or least favorite ploppy catchphrases?
You took the bus card. You know, all the typical shit. And then that's when I usually say, look, if you could play this game backwards, these places wouldn't be so fucking big. it's fun to kind of come up with the little catchphrases and the little anti-catchphrases that people haven't heard before to like just be like, okay there, guy. I mean, there's so many of them.
I noticed like dealers in different regions of the country have the same spin on the same freight, where it's like in the, you know, in like more Asian populated like casinos, they'll go, ay-yah. And then if you go like to the Southwest, it's like, ay-yah-yah. Like, and then you move around. It's
as long as they're not going, oh my God.
Yeah.
That is just like, ooh, I don't know why. That, which is really funny. Actually, another thing, this leads me to the funny thing. In London, the pit calls over servers. They go, they purse their lips and they go, it's the most like, it like feels like someone just like licked the back of your neck. You're like, what the fuck? Why'd you do that? And I'm like, what? That's how they call over servers and stuff. And like, it just cuts through, you know, when you hear, it's a very high frequency and it cuts through. And you're like, you're fucking creeping me out. Dude. I'm like, stop.
It's not comforting when you're losing to just have someone give you a little peck on the cheek or the neck.
No, I want to punch him in the face. And it's so funny because I was talking to a girl who was a pit boss there, and she was like, yeah, I think we only do this here. I didn't know that. She's like, I was dealing in Europe, and I did that, and everyone looked at me and they said, do not do that, please. And I was like, yeah, because that's how it feels. It's like, but they just do it there. It's just normal. Only in the casinos. People don't like call each other. It's a weird like thing that developed in the casinos there in London.
Could you share that story that you shared last night. Is that allowed?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I can do that. Yeah, yeah. I was at this this casino that's, you know, referred to as a club, and it's a very, like, high-profile club where it's a very small, very upscale on the inside, and you have this, like, I think, like, a week review period, and there's, like, limitations on what you can do and blah, blah, blah. You sign this whole thing, fill out all this information, then they give you a temporary card for, like, a few days or a week. I forget what it was exactly. But I was in this casino, and I was playing, and then this guy joins the table, and he's just a miserable prick. He's, like, got the look on his face, like, just absolutely miserable, like, asking me why I'm doing this, why I'm doing that. He played terrible basic strategy too, and I was just like, oh man. Like, anyways, and he asked me what I was doing there, and I just kind of answered him, and then I said, what are you doing here? He said, it's none of your business. I said, well, you didn't have to be a fucking douchebag. And he said, what did you just say to me? I said, you didn't have to be a fucking douchebag. He goes, oh really, oh really? And then he just walks off. And then, like, a few minutes later, I just see the casino manager, like, walking down to me with, like, a clipboard in his hand. He says, excuse me, sir, did you just call this man a effing douchebag? And I was like, no, I don't think I did. And in that moment, I was like, oh, no, they record audio here in England. They can record audio. And I totally forgot. I was like, I don't think I said that. He's like, no, actually, twice. He said, I was like, oh, twice? All right, well, I guess we got to get out of here, okay? And he's like, okay, you come with me. And he, like, cashed me out. Then another casino manager came down to walk me out. And I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to, you know, like, cause any trouble here or anything. And he looked at me and he said, I've been waiting to say that to him for 10 years. And we both belly laughed. We were dying laughing. And then he's like, okay, now get out of here. And I was like, all right, fuck. It was so funny. Did not regret calling that guy a fucking douchebag, for the record.
What would make you walk away from AP Blackjack?
I don't know. I don't have that answer yet. And when I do, then I guess I'll know. But I don't know yet. So, and I'm glad I don't know yet, because I think I'm still going to take a decent amount more money from it.
What do you think sets the $1 million card counters apart from others who may be struggling to reach that mark?
I've always had this thing, and my wife always points it out, that, like, and my mom always says, ever since I was a little kid, that once I set my mind to something, it's done. Like, I do it, I learn it, no matter what, I go for it. It's kind of like a characteristic of myself that I've had in every, and it comes out in every aspect of my endeavors. But I work really, really hard, and I challenge myself, and I really want to succeed my goals, and I really, really work hard. And I think what sets apart the people that get these things done is showing up every day, pushing through, working. When something doesn't work, you find out why it didn't work. Why is this bothering me so much? Or, you know, why did this losing streak last so long? What, you know, what am I going to change? What am I going to do? Fix those problems, fix the little problems, pay attention to the little details along the way, and unkink the hose so the water can just keep flowing. And it takes a shit ton of work. And, you know, I think those that work it, there's no one way, because there's ways that people could succeed that I couldn't, due to who they are, their mannerisms, their personality, what they do, how they operate. But they did not succeed by not busting their ass no matter what.
Do you have any like go-to ritual for when you have like a big downswing? Like, what's happening in your mind?
Okay, so two parts of that, I guess. The downswing, intercession downswing. You know, you can get sweaty, heart rate goes up, and I've gotten better at acknowledging the heart rate, taking deep breaths, slowing down. Because, you know, these are, you know, this is crazy. Like, here it is, I'm in for 30K, like, time to buy in for another 10K. It's only been an hour or two. And it's just like, whoa, this is a big one for where I'm at right now. And it's just like, clear head, do it, count what's going on right now. How many decks is that in the discard tray? Look around the pit, keep your head clear. Make sure you're operating all these things, checking out all of these, and focus on that. Focus in performing, focus in not mucking up your operation due to clouded judgment and emotion. And now the second part is terrible downswings, long losing streaks, like mentality of just getting beat down for so long, you know, that's a different thing. That's a thing that feels like it's like getting in you. It's not as shocking now. It's just almost depressing. And that takes more of just kind of like rallying up yourself before every session, kind of getting yourself, you know, to just drop where you're at and just show up to work and grind the hours and constantly stoking the understanding of the math is going to work out. It's more of like a long game at that point. It's not like a shocking panic or anxiety. It's more of like a, this is fucking depressing. But, you know, those are definitely things that have helped me to get through or remain calm in both of those scenarios of negative variance.
Do you ever play differently depending on like the casino's reputation for heat?
Mostly no, but a dealer just looked at me when I had max bets out a week ago. I actually posted it on my Twitter. I was going to split my tens and he looked at me and he goes, man, come on, don't do that. And he looked at me and he goes, we're on the same page. Don't do that. He was giving great pen and everything. And I was like, okay, thank you. Hilarious thing is, he would have made 21 had I split. And I looked at him, I'm like, bro, he would have fucking made 21. He goes, yeah. And then another dealer came up behind him, and it was a double deck game. They usually drop the deck after that. And I was like, one more. He goes, I know. I'm going to give you one more. I know. And I was like, oh, thank you, dude. But yeah, so I'll heed I still got time, and I got timing at this place. I mean, it was a double deck game cut in half, but it's still beatable if your spread's good. It's still pretty good, actually. But yeah, so I'll not split tens if I know for sure that you're done when you do that.
Yeah, the double deck game cut in half is, if the rules are pretty standard, then it's essentially kind of similar to a six deck game. But then the flips, it's like, if it's like over 1.1, it's like, it becomes immediately unplayable. Like, so you guys have to be really careful if you do see that half cut to make sure it's actually less, half cut or less. Like, because if they go over even just a little bit, it's kind of game over. All right. Are there any immediate signs that you can tell when you show up to place that you're going to get hours at this place by, you know, just the way it look? Or are there, you know, is there any indication like, oh, this is going to be...
I'll give a disclaimer that I have thought this before and been completely wrong. But you know, you go into a place, it's understaffed, it's graveyard shift. The person is at the podium. They don't even ID you. You walk in, you know, usually it's starting to add up to, all right, I think I'm going to be able to get some time in at this place. Places that are in like particularly impoverished areas sometimes, you know, but that's just like a stereotype that's not always true.
I love when there's chaos in the pit and there's disorganization and I'm playing, I'm like, oh, this is going to be nice for at least probably half a day or more, you know.
Right.
When I see them running around and they're just like, you know, they're afraid, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Or if
yeah.
they're completely uninterested, like if you have pit bosses just like staring at the TV and just not, like, that's also so nice.
Yeah, the best one is when, like, yeah, they just, that you hear someone make a comment about like how they're understaffed in surveillance or something. That's happened to me before. I'm like, are you or I got a $1,600 mispay once, and I was like, any moment now, ring, and I was like, there was no call, and I just got $1,600. I had $800, and it was a double down, and she beat me by like one and paid me, and I was just like, holy shit. You know, I used to feel bad about that, but with a payout that big, I wouldn't correct it. But like if it's little stuff, sometimes I'll be like, but then that does two things when you correct them. It makes the dealer go, oh shit, I'm making mistakes. I need to pay better attention. And also, it doesn't let you know if you just take that money and there's no phone call, you know, surveillance isn't watching. So it does multiple things when you just take the mispay.
I've never heard it described that way, but yeah, that is a good point. I was playing in a place where a mispay happened and I called over and the manager came over and okay, one second. The manager leaves and opens this door that I could see from the pit, goes in, comes back out and fixes the mispay. They didn't have anyone in surveillance.
Nice.
Like she just went in there and rewound the tape and played it. They actively had no one watching it ever. Like it's just insane.
That's awesome.
there are certain players who specifically, you know, target graveyard shift to try to last longer. Did you ever do that? Like, how did you pick your hours of when you would play?
So I would just play always. And, you know, I still just go, you know, especially with the family, I go whenever I can. I try to go where it makes sense, where I can have a break in the day, which usually means I'm playing on multiple shifts. It's been so long since I've taken a solo trip, just because I've been with the family for so long. But, you know, when I do solo trips, it's just I'm playing every shift. But I have usually noticed that I get longer sessions on graveyard.
Yeah, if you can handle the lifestyle, graveyard can be really nice, but it is tough like to adjust to that if you're not used to it. Do you use any expanded deviations?
Yeah, I pretty much use them all. And I've learned some other ones that are super low count deviations just because I eat a lot of low cards at higher min tables. So, you know, hitting things against bus cards and stuff like that.
Do you get more weird looks or comments splitting 10s or doubling ace 9?
I think it's splitting 10s because it's more, right? You're taking more cards. You're taking up more real estate on the table. And it takes time. They split them, give you another card, you split again. So, yeah, you definitely get more weird looks because there's more time involved when you split 10s. But, you know, from a dealer, just a quick little, this is probably about the same reaction where they're like, you're doubling that?
Yeah. Or do you ever get the ace when you split the 10s and then able to double that?
I've done that a few times. Set a table with a full table, and everyone was mad that I split 10s. And I'm betting, you know, table max way more than anyone was betting at the table. And then I go to double, and like all the gasps and like all this like criticism towards me just went silent. It was like, and then everyone was just like, eyes wide open, like, holy shit, this guy's actually crazy. And then the dealer bust, and then they were all like, holy shit. Like, they were ready to clap at that point. I was like, told you'd be all right. We're good.
Yeah, I was playing in a place for like 4 days, and the hand that they just like, all right, enough's enough, was one of those. Like, I had two 10 splits on both hands, and I split them and doubled the ace. You know, it was huge. And as soon as that happened, it was just ring, and I was out of there.
Yeah, right after that happened, someone ran up to me from the pit and said, "You give me your ID." I was like, "No, that's an easy answer. I'll just take my chips and go now." He was like, you know, it's funny when they approach you, like they have the authority to just pull your ID out of your pocket. It's like,
just because you made a super fun play.
Yeah. It's like, no, I'm good, man.
All right. Well, thanks, Brennan, for answering these rapid fire questions. Sorry if we didn't get to all of them, but hopefully when Brennan makes the other million, you guys can have another batch of questions for the $2 million podcast.
Wait, there's a few more questions. Hang on. Do you only do card counting, or did you also use other ways of generating EV? Card counting. Or let's just say blackjack. Blackjack in general. Okay, I did want to answer that one. Thank you. Thanks for having me, man. It's always fun to chat with you.